Earlier in this program, we turned, as we often do, to a reporter for the New York Times. The breadth and depth of the Times coverage informs every other news organization, and it's acknowledged as the most important newspaper in the country. Last week, the paper announced that Bill Keller would step down after 8 years as executive editor to be replaced by Jill Abramson, who will become the first woman to hold the top job at the Times. The change comes as the news industry itself undergoes fundamental changes. Journalists, is the future of the New York Times important to you? Why? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Bill Keller and Jill Abramson join us now from our bureau in New York, and thanks very much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
And Jill Abramson, in your first comment to the Times after your appointment, you said, in my house growing up, the Times substituted for religion. First day after your appointment is made, and you're already in trouble.
Well, I made that comment in jest. I guess that isn't permissible anymore.
I suspect you're right. It does, though, feed into a new perception, I think, around the country of what some call the lamestream media, established news organization, including The Times, and I should admit NPR, are perceived by some as elitist and biased against the politics and culture of a large part of the country.
Well, I take issue with that, and I think that would really be exaggerating the nature of my comment.
And I wonder, Bill Keller, this is something that has happened during your time there at the paper as executive editor. I'm not blaming you, but I'm sure you've noticed it.
Thank you. I've noticed the perception. I think that's partly to do with a general polarizing of opinion in the country. There is probably a greater deal of cynicism about politics in general and particularly about the media. We acknowledge that. We realize we live in a fishbowl and we try to live up to our standards. But, there is a heavy partisan streak in the world of media and, we have to just try to avoid crossing a line.
One of the changes that has happened since you came in, at first there was a public editor. This admittedly came after a scandal, the Jason Blair scandal, but a public editor was hired and has now been cycled through several iterations. And the executive editor of the New York Times is now willing to appear on programs like this one. It's almost inconceivable that 20 years ago Abe Rosenthal would have come on a program like this one.
Yeah, we've learned... if we've learned one thing in the last 8 or 10 years, it's that the notion that the New York Times or CBS, Walter Cronkite, some, kind of established voice of authority speaks to people and doesn't have to answer when they speak back, that's no longer operative. We realize that a lot of times people will have questions about stories we've run, why we've done them, whether we've violated national security or trespassed on somebody's privacy, and in this day and age, that we owe people an explanation. We feel that we owe them an explanation.
Bill and I think agree that all institutions at this point have to be more transparent than they once were. And just about every time we've published a story that's become controversial, even before the controversy erupts, Bill and I have both often gone on our website online to answer readers' questions about why we publish.
And do you go online afterwards and read the comments to say, maybe I got something wrong there?
Yeah, sure.
I wanted to ask, Jill Abramson, your background is as an investigative reporter. You're also the Washington bureau chief and the number two position, the managing editor, before you you take over. And that background is obviously in working for the newspaper. I understand you've recently undergone a sort of apprenticeship on the digital side of the newspaper.
Well, yeah, I spent the last 6 months of 2010 focusing exclusively on the digital side of our news operation, mainly, not as an apprenticeship because I'd been involved in that end of what we do for quite some years. But because, you know, we wanted to make sure that our newsroom is one newsroom and one news gathering operation for print and digital. And I came out of the 6 months with some, I think, very good notions about how to reorganize our newsroom.
And Bill Keller, I'd read that one of the reasons for the timing of this decision or this announcement was that you wanted to wait until the new paywall at the New York Times had been up and running and established. That's people who download, I think, more than 20 articles per month are asked to pay if they want to download any more.
That's right. I mean, there's, you know, we're never going to be finished with the reinvention of the Times or the website, but there were actually two things that happened this year that I wanted to see through. One of them was that, of course, the pay model is not something that's essentially designed in the newsroom. It's designed by our business side, but they gave us a seat at the table, and we took advantage of it to express our views, try to influence the outcome, which we were quite happy with. The other was, the less sexy but also very important question of how the newsroom is organized. We've been, since really May of 2005, embarked on a process of making sure that the foreign editor is not just the foreign editor for the print newspaper, but is the foreign editor for the website as well. And same thing with the business editor, the culture editor, and so on. And it's been a six-year process of first overcoming some psychological and cultural barriers, and then ultimately reorganizing to make things really run like a single newsroom.
Run like a single newsroom, Jill Abramson. That's it sounds easy. It's not. It's pretty difficult, in fact.
Well, it can be difficult, but I feel I'm taking over at a time when both the print newspaper and our website are in more or less glorious shape. We have, more foreign correspondents right now than I think we've ever had. We opened two new national bureaus recently in Phoenix and Kansas City at a time when many of our competitors have completely ceased to have correspondents out in the country. So, I'm not going to pretend that it's a burden to get this wonderful job right now. It's like the opportunity to lead a newsroom, which is superlative.
And Bill Keller, time to go out on top, but 8 years by the measure of previous executive editors at the Times, others have served a lot longer.
Actually, I will have served longer than any of my three predecessors. The last one who served longer than 8 years was Abe Rosenthal, who served I don't remember how many, but
a
many,
lot. Yeah.
many more than eight. There's one of my predecessors jokes about it as the two-term limit. like with presidents.
Yeah,
and there is of course no two-term limit in the newspaper editing business, but 8 years feels about right. It's time. I've got a strong bench to hand off to. We're not in the middle of the throes of an immediate crisis, except the sort of slow-burning crisis that the whole industry is in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to go out before the job stops being fun.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We want to hear from journalists today. How important is the New York Times? How much does its future matter to you? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And Philip's on the line with us, calling from Charlotte.
Yes, how are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say, as someone who's traveled a lot to overseas, the New York Times is seen as the kind of gold standard. I mean, obviously for U.S. papers, and so it gives a good, comprehensive approach that people outside the U.S. really follow, and it's important for our viewpoint from the outside world, so from outside the U.S. So.
Well, Jill Abramson, let me ask you about that. We've seen one news organization after another sharply reduce the amount of foreign coverage and reduce the number of foreign bureaus. The Boston Globe, for example, which had something to do with the New York Times, used to have quite an extensive foreign bureau and no longer has any foreign correspondents, but it's not hardly alone in that respect. Do you envision the Times maintaining its sizable commitment to foreign news?
I absolutely do. It's part of our core coverage, and we love the fact, as your caller pointed out, that we really do have a global audience. And, you know, we feel part of our mission is covering the world, and that commitment remains unchanged.
Unchanged. The Times has largely resisted the pressures that other news have forced other news organizations to reduce all those bureaus. And do you anticipate that the new paywall is going to change the fundamental model? Again, that's the business side, but it has no small impact on the amount of money available for news coverage.
Right. But, you know, the revenue stream that we're trying to build through the digital subscription plan is important. But, you know, the Times's view of its mission and our publisher's commitment to that mission is a very stable aspect of our work. And it doesn't depend on any one new thing that we're trying to enhance our revenues.
Bill Keller, let me put the same question to you in the form of an email from David in Texas. How is the switch to paid online subscriptions going? I never viewed the free access model as economically viable for a serious news organization.
Well, so far, everybody's quite happy. They're not releasing numbers until after at least the second quarter, in part because everybody realizes that in the early days you get, you know, the most devoted readers signing up and mm-hmm. people who've come in, been attracted by discounts and so on. But it's running considerably ahead of the forecast that we made in terms of number of subscriptions, and we're seeing other interesting things, such as an improvement in the rate of print newspaper subscriptions. Evidently, some people like the idea that you buy the New York Times for home delivery and you get all this other stuff for free.
Bill Keller, the outgoing executive editor of the New York Times, and his successor, Jill Abramson, with us from our bureau in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can go next to Michael. Michael with us from Minneapolis.
Hello.
Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
All right. Two quick things. First of all, I was a little alarmed when I heard Mr. Keller on last night refer to the job that me and Jill were doing at the Times. That seemed a little bit of a strange grammatical error for someone who runs a newspaper.
Is this by any chance Father Stadler from Junior English?
What was that? Yeah, something like that. Well, my mom is an English professor, so I sort of had it hardwired into me.
All right.
Please apologize to her, and I'll apologize to the ghosts of all of my elementary school teachers, who I'm sure be appalled.
My larger concern, though, is the fact that I feel like the New York Times has that in recent years. You know, I commend you for acknowledging that you got it wrong with the war, but I still think the Times has erred far too much in recent years with siding in the government and sort of not being always the adversarial news organization it needs to be. You know, for instance, I'm alarmed at the rampant escalation of anonymous sourcing. Now, anonymous sourcing, you know, the old saw that journalism should comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. But in recent years, the Times, it's not nearly as bad as, say, the Washington Post or something, but the Times has increasingly allowed government officials to spout things off the record without having to identify themselves. And I just think that's not what journalism is for. Journalism, you know, you only...
Michael, don't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to give Jill Abramson a chance to respond. Is this policy going to change under your administration?
Well, you know, I think there are plenty of wonderful stories that we've published that, you know, hold the government and powerful institutions accountable. So I disagree with the caller on that point. And actually, you know, an important initiative that Bill led was to cut down on the amount of anonymous sourcing we had in our news report.
And it may have been reduced, but there's still a lot of it.
Well, there's too much of it. You know, we both would agree with that. And, you know, increasingly, you know, everyone, including press secretaries to politicians, don't want to be identified, which is ridiculous on its face. Right. But, you know, it's a long-term fight to really press the sources who are talking to us for stories to go on the record, because it means so much more when someone attaches their name to a statement.
And
if I could just connect the two parts of the listener's question, I mean, in order to hold government accountable, you sometimes have to give people within government who are critical of it the protection of anonymity. Otherwise, they're sacrificing their jobs when they complain about what their bosses are up to. So, yes, sometimes, you know, government spokesmen get and don't deserve the protection of being held nameless. But a lot of times, those anonymous sources are people who are holding their bosses to account.
And we just have 30 seconds left, so I'm going to ask an impossible task of Jill Abramson, the incoming executive editor of the New York Times. Email question from Robert. How does the new editor understand objectivity?
You know, I have never believed that there is a platonic ideal of objectivity, but I believe passionately in fairness and questioning assumptions, and that reporters can't ever go into a story with their mind made up. So my commitment to that is total.
Jill Abramson, thanks very much. Congratulations on the appointment.
Thank you very much.
Jill Abramson, the incoming executive editor of the New York Times, Bill Keller, congratulations on your transition to becoming a full-time writer.
Thank you.
And Bill Keller is outgoing executive editor of the New York Times. They both joined us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow, as revolt continues to sweep through North Africa and the Middle East, we'll talk about the elephant in the room, Saudi Arabia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.